In just a few days, we'll start up the next round of third grade Bibles, and that's when Pam and I get together those young members of our congregation in anticipation of event when they're conferred something. When we gather publicly around them and we do the handoff, their moms, their dads, their baptismal sponsors, give them the big thing. They get a Bible. And sometimes I stop and think to myself, man, are you sure? to give them one of those, that's a little bit like giving them the keys to the car. That's a little bit like giving them the password on the computer for your bank account. To hand them that powerful, that dangerous volume, what were we thinking? A couple days ago, we also got together with the families of confirmation students. And they're all in middle school and, you know, googly and gangly and animated. And some of them are returning to the program, and some of them are just about ready to complete, and some of them are brand new to the exercise. We got together with parents of these kiddos, and we sort of talked about the things that are going to be part of this confirmation experience. And the kids looked at each other, and they looked at the ceiling, and they said, why do I have to do this, and stuff like that. But it was, frankly, more fun to watch the parents. Watch and imagine what was going through their minds as we did this orientation time together. You could see them wondering, will my kid just hate this and want to run away? Will my kid just love this and become a religious nerd? Will my kid, well, do what I did and end up someplace in between? Pretty soon, too, the menu for all the adult learning options will cycle up. And there's a whole bunch of classes, and you'll see a display out there defining what's going to happen with Carol Good's parenting class and with this whole series on the 500th anniversary of the Lutheran Reformation. We got a Presbyterian guy to teach that. So, you know, all these ways that we're looking forward to these opportunities for nurture and so much more. One of the things that we're going to be doing later on in the fall is a class on, well, listening to our journeys, our faith life, our spiritual way in the world. And we sent out some invitations ahead of time for people to contemplate how they might talk about that, how that has worked out in their own life. Some of them have kind of cornered me afterward and said, you know, my story's not a good one. There's a lot of things I doubt. And, you know, there's still a lot of stuff I'm just angry about. Are you sure you want me to tell my faith story? I'm going, man, this is going to be good. Little kids, big kids, and bigger kids. Do you see this arc, this line, this winding trail of discovery? I wonder if you'll try a little exercise with me. I always think twice about doing this when I invite you to close your eyes in church. But would you do that? We're just going to, like, for 2 minutes, we'll take a little walk in our heads. So if you close your eyes, and we do this with the kids who are getting ready for their first communion, we actually climb into a time machine. And you put your hand on the dial that defines the date. Now, some of you are still looking at me. I want you to close your eyes. Rod. Okay. So just imagine, if you will, kind of dial that time machine back. Can you see a third grader? That third grader is sitting at your desk. That third grader is wearing a name tag. And it's got your name on it. They're in a room with your peers. There's a kid there with your anxieties and your hopes. There's a kid in that room with your curiosity. Can you see that third grader? Who is that? Now keep them closed and dial a little bit differently. Dial up to, well, maybe an adolescent student, a young teenager on the edge of young adulthood, a young person there sorting out powerful things and powerful feelings. a young adolescent sorting out mysterious urges and a confusing sense of identity. Do you see that kid? That kid who has your parents? That kid who has your temptations? That kid who has your awkward body? Well, keep them closed just for a little longer and put your hand back on that time dial and dial it just a little bit further. Now maybe you can see that young grown-up, that woman, that man, that one with your driver's license in his pocket, that person who lives with your mortgage and your kids and your shoes. Can you picture that adult carrying those burdens of work as opposed to leisure, risk and freedom, protest and patriotism? Oh, keep them closed just one more time. Put your hand on that dial and flip the ears a little further. Are you also able to see that old man, that senior woman, that one now more wrinkled and stiff-jointed, one with a longer string of hard knocks and a longer string of joyful moments? Can you see that person? That one who lives with your last will and testament? That one who lives with your medical records and pictures of your family on the wall beside the bed? Out of the time machine. Open your eyes. Wake up. Nap's over. Did you see you? Did you see inside of you, your own life, your own experience, your own sort of development over the years, ways that you've changed and maybe ways that you haven't changed, things that you've discovered or things that you tried to ignore? Life's kind of short. No, it's not kind of short. It is short. I got a birthday coming up and I'll tell you about it. As pastor, sometimes I end up with people at that last point on the time machine dial, way, way, way late in the game of life, right? And sometimes we talk together in those moments about what they'd like to see happen at their service, maybe what hymns they want to have sing, and please don't let my nephew Bill say anything, you know, those kind of conversations. But most always when we talk together, it's not about going to heaven or what to expect when the lights finally go out. You know what they want to talk about? You. They want to talk about where they've been and what they've done and what they haven't done. I've never come to those moments when somebody has said to me, you know, I really wish I'd watched more TV. Or I really wish I'd spent less time with my kids. I mean, we know that. Life's short. And so what do you want to do with it? Those first followers of Jesus thought at first that they had Jesus with them only for a few very short years. In fact, as the scholars look at the Gospels, you can kind of count the number of Passovers and make an educated guess that somehow between that event, that wedding at Cana in Galilee to the cross there on a Good Friday, that's maybe 3 years. This brief period of Jesus' public ministry, all to conclude with the death and the resurrection and the ascension of Jesus. But then, of course, you read on in the Bible into the book of the Acts and into the Pauline epistles and even into the apocalypse of John. You realize that there's something different at work. And it's clear that Jesus hasn't gone anywhere, but that Jesus has gone everywhere and is here even now. Jesus with third graders armed with Bibles, no less. Jesus with teenagers armed with bodies and voices and independence, no less. Jesus with adults armed with agency and experience and power, no less. And Jesus even with old farts, armed with maturity and wisdom and wealth, no less. A lifelong arc of discovery and wonder. Do you remember what those earliest disciples of Jesus called him? Oh, they would call God Abba, they would call God Father, but what would they call Jesus? Sometimes they would call him Kyrios or Kyrie, Lord, but what most often would they say about Jesus? When they asked a question, when they wondered about a story that he told, what did they say? Teacher, yeah, that very, very old Hebrew word. What is it? Rabbi. Rabbi. The master, the professor, the instructor, that one from whom we learn so much important and salient and crucial things. Whoever is faithful in a very little is faithful also in much. And whoever is dishonest in a very little is dishonest also in much. No slave can serve two masters. For a slave will either hate the one and love the other, or be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth. Can you hear the rabbi talking to us, helping see us through? I know a college professor. He likes to give opportunity for students at the end of the class. He gives them a chance for evaluations, and so they scrawl and they write cards. And one of them said, "I think this was an excellent class, but I'm concerned that the teacher puts too much responsibility for learning on the students." I read this one. A medical school, the lead surgeon was taking the students, the interns, you know, off on rounds. And they visit the different rooms in the hospital, and they come around to one, and the professor says, "Well, the muscle in this patient's right leg have contracted a good deal, and now one leg is actually shorter than the other, and so therefore he limps." Then the professor turns to the students and says, "So, well, what would you do in this circumstance?" And one of the shining young prospects said, "Well, I guess I would do the same thing." Where's the balls? Hold them up. Have they migrated a bit? Maybe ever so gently, can you flip it to another? I haven't seen that. I sometimes, you know, things roll all the way down to the front under the pews, but these haven't come forward. Where are they? It's moving down there. Here's another one. Gracie's got one. You know, no kidding. By the end of the service, you got to make sure everybody gets to touch that ball. Hold that and remember that. How do you learn to throw? You have to do it. We follow Jesus in the doing because he follows us. Amen.